by David Kelly. The Raucous Caucus is next. I'm Askia Muhammad. Thank you for listening.
WPFW, Washington.
Good evening, Washington, D.C., and America, and welcome to the Raucous Caucus. Join the fray as we broadcast live from the golden studios of WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica. Join Terry, Mark, and Garland as they boldly go where no commentators have gone before to inform, even save the nation with wit, wisdom, and sagacity on the Raucous Caucus.
Good evening. Good evening and welcome to another edition of the Raucous Caucus. Here are the golden studios. In fact, I think Terry's sitting there on a pile of rubies and gold.
Apparently, the rubies, golden studios.
Rubies and diamonds and emeralds.
Let's not talk about piles again, guys.
Yeah, that's right. Speaking of sitting. My name's Garland Nixon, and I am here with
Mark Levine
and
Terry D. Kester
in the golden studios
of WPFW
89.3 FM here in Washington, D.C., and with the Raucous Caucus. And you are part of the Raucous Caucus, too. And we will now begin caucusing from 7 to 8 p.m. every Tuesday. Next week, we will be at Ben's Next Door, 1211 U Street. Come down and caucus with us, oh, members of the Great Caucus.
That's right.
You too can be raucus.
Yes. I like that. Great Caucus.
The Great Raucus Caucus.
That's what we'll be known as, you know, thousands of years from now. People will look back and say, remember the Great Caucus that changed the world.
It's better than they called the Great Unwashed.
You're right. I kind of like that.
Either way is good. You know, I'm not proud about, you know.
But
are you telling us you're unwashed? Never mind. Yeah, Go ahead.
You know, but he's not great. He's just unwashed. So he's halfway there.
I'll just move a little bit to the right.
Well, we got
Edward Studio tonight. Yes.
You've been moving to the right a lot.
Now wait a minute.
So we got important things to talk about. We've got big doings here. Big important things to talk about. We've been talking about conspiracy theories. We've been talking about paranoia. Pretty much, you know, Terry's autobiography.
But I think it's his daily life.
Right. So we'll move on to, you know, anti-government. You know,
This really hurts, guys. I'm going to weep here soon, you know?
But tonight we're going to talk about we're going to go to the base of this whole thing.
That's all you need to start with.
That's all we need
to know.
So, right. Well, I guess it's all over now. We can call it quits and throw on a public PSA or something. But we're going
to
talk about...
In his own mind, that's the way
you're right.
Life works.
Yes, we're going to talk about... And this is a term because it means different things to different people. The... Government.
Ooh,
the government.
The G word.
Ooh. The government.
The capital G.
Because, you know, we talk about, you know, conspiracy theories. We talk about people who are anti-government, people who are pro-government, people who work for the government. But we never talk about what is the government? Because in reality, it's a concept. There's a lot of people there. There's things going on. There are various branches of the government that are very, very different from each other. Even within the executive, there are, you know, we talk about the judicial branch. Well, we've got the Senate and we've got the Department of Labor and we've got the Marines.
Yeah. They're kind of different.
Yeah. So when we say the government, we talk about it as though it's one entity and one blob. And then we say, you know, the government's out to get us or the government's doing this or the government's doing that when it's, you know, kind of a big octopus with tentacles going all over the place. So the question is, Mark, let's start with you.
Sure.
When I say the government, what is the government to you?
to me, and I'm going to quote the great comic strip, Hank Ketchum, the guy that wrote Pogo?
Yeah.
We have met the government.
Walt Kelly.
We have, right, Hank Ketchum was like Dennis the Menace. Sorry. Yeah. Anyway, to quote Walt Kelly, we have met the government, and it is us.
Mm-hmm.
No, he said.
So we're out to get ourselves?
I know he said we've met the enemy, and it is us. Yeah. I am paraphrasing.
Paraphrasing Pogo? That's not allowed.
I can paraphrase Pogo. I pull out my Constitution, and it begins the words, we the people of the United States are supposed to be in charge. And I think you kind of get the government that, we the people deserve.
That we feel that we deserve, right?
And that doesn't mean, I don't mean to speak badly of the American people, but at a time when, let's face it, a lot of people are busy sniping at each other and believing that they're always right and not willing to talk to people who disagree with them and not willing to use logic.
Sounds like the government.
Well, you know, there's a wonderful article in today's Washington Post that I was telling you all about before we came on air by Ezra Klein, page A11, for those of you who got your post when you're done, talking about a great study by the Yale psychologist Jeffrey Cohen. Let me just repeat this study because I think it goes
We want to hear that.
I think it goes to why we have the government we have. They did a study where they separated liberals and conservatives, and they had two proposals. One was very harsh welfare reform, and one was pretty generous. So they showed it to the liberals and conservatives, and as you might expect, the liberals supported the more generous plan. The conservatives wanted the harsh plan. Okay, that makes sense. Then they get another group of liberals and conservatives, showed them the same plans, but they said that the Democratic Party favored the harsh plan, and the Republican Party favored the more lax, the more generous welfare plan. 2-1, all the liberals supported the harsh Democratic plan, and all the Republicans, the conservatives, supported the generous Republican plan. They went exactly the opposite of their own beliefs. They did so because they were told their party supported a certain cause, and then they insisted that they made up their minds on their own.
They were all realists. Yeah, Terry, what is the government? What is it? Explain it to me. Mark and I are confused.
You know, if you hadn't given me that book last week.
The book.
Yes, the book. And, you know, I would give you a different answer a couple days ago than I would give you now. And the book we're talking about that Garland is requiring me to read, and it's wonderful and I recommend it, is not the first book is by Daniel Quinn. The first book was Ishmael. The second book is The Story of B. And the third book is My Ishmael. And I would have said that government is necessary, a necessary institution in terms of social interaction, in terms of our society. I'm not sure, reading the story of B, that that's necessarily true. We're stuck in that situation. I don't think it's kind of like what Marx says, you know, the government is so much more, and that is not a bad thing either, than people understand. I heard an interesting discussion today on another network about the EPA, and people think the EPA passes regulations about pollution and that's it. Well, these were two employees of the EPA talking about all the hundreds of things the EPA does in terms of, you know, measuring toxic disasters and everything else, helping in Katrina, helping just hundreds and hundreds. They just went through this litany of things that the EPA does.
Cleans up toxic spills,
That nobody talks about, you know, and then like the Republicans in particular say, you know, the EPA's got to go. With the Americans don't even realize all the good stuff, the constantly good stuff that the EPA does for us on a daily basis. And this is true of almost every agency in the government. And the real crime is not what is government, but we the people, particularly because of politicians and media to some degree, but primarily politicians, we don't even know what our government is. And there's a lot about it in fact, is very necessary and very good.
But I blame we the people. We have met the government. It is us. We are so quick to blame others, and yet we are the ones who, in effect, and there's difficulties, and there's corporations, and there's money, and you can point all those things out, and that's all true. I'm not denying it.
Me neither.
But at the end of the day, I still think we're in charge, and I still think, to some extent, we're responsible for the government we have.
You know, I think we're completely responsible for the government that we have. You know,
Sooner or later.
At the government, really, you know, people are angry at the government, and they look at our government here as though it's some separate entity, almost like
a
person,
foreign occupation,
almost like a person who looks down at their hand and says, "That darn hand of mine, it's evil. The things that my hand is doing, that's your hand. Whether you want to admit it or not, you're in control of that hand." We have a lot more control over the government than we either choose to exercise or admit that we have. The reality is this. We can change the government if we want. We can change a lot of things about the government if we want. If you look at the government, a couple of things real quick. Okay, you can say that spending is out of control and it's in debt, right? Look at the average American and what's the problem with. If you start looking at the things, problems that the government has, well, there's bickering and fighting and they can't get along and they can't agree on anything and they switch positions just because. Listen to the article that Mark just read.
The study.
As you guys were saying a few minutes ago, we are the government. It reflects us. We get the government that we want, and we get a government that does the same thing that we do, that we do as individuals and as groups.
Part of the problem, and go back to again, you started it, Garland. It's your fault.
Uh-oh.
Going back to Daniel Quinn, you know, we are at a point, and I think he brings it out very clearly, of what is called cultural collapse. And during this period of cultural collapse, there is a lot of dismay, a lot of anxiety, because people are realizing intuitively, not necessarily intellectually or not mm-hmm. really understand, they're realizing that the system they are caught up in does not work. And the system is much bigger than the government.
Right,
much bigger than the government. The cultural systemic problem is much bigger than just a government. But they are seeing that we are headed on a path that is not sustainable. Everybody kind of knows this in their gut,
mm-hmm.
that it's not sustainable the way we're headed. But no matter what goes on, we keep on making little adjustments to, in fact, sustain something we know is not sustainable, primarily being the collapse of our planet.
But here's the problem. The government. It's a singular word. The people.
Yeah.
Even we the people is a singular word, right?
And yep.
It's used in the Constitution in order to establish just, you know, the we the people.
Yeah.
We the people are plural. I mean, we there is not one government because, let's face it, we've got Republicans in charge of the House, and they are determined to make President Obama fail, even if it means making the economy fail. Obama's trying to bend over backwards to meet in a middle that doesn't exist. You have liberals very angry, including myself, at President Obama for bending over that far backward. In effect, you've got pretty close to 50% of America that support a progressive position, pretty close to 50% of America that supports a conservative position. We don't talk to each other. It's one of the reasons why, frankly, I like bringing even conservatives on the radio and arguing with them, because at least when we talk past each other, we at least hear each other. Because we're not talking to each other, people just believe what they're told to believe. You know, we live in a society where you want to watch Fox News all day, you want to watch MSNBC all day, you want to get your news from the Wall Street Journal, you want to get your news from the Nation or Mother Jones, and because we don't read each other's sources, we even have Google telling us, oh, you're a conservative, I'll give you Matt Drudge. Oh, you're a liberal, I'll give you Daily Coast. And it's like we're in two separate nations.
A red nation
and a blue nation.
The other thing, and we're going to put the number out here in a bit, and we're going to get some calls, but, you know, the thing is, we look at the government, and we say the government doesn't work. A cultural and social system that is broken is looking at a political system that is broken and saying, what's wrong with you?
As we look,
in this environmental collapse, and people say, oh my gosh, they won't do this or that with the EPA. Meanwhile, as individuals, we don't do anything to lower our carbon footprint. We don't do anything as an individual to make changes for a greener
earth.
That's the government.
It's a pain for me to do it.
You see, the government is supposed to do green things and save the planet. As an individual, we do absolutely nothing. We go on with our lives and we exist in the way we exist and we do the things that we do without making anything greener. And we look at the government, we say, how dare them? They're going on with politics as usual. They're going on about their daily lives as politicians, and they're not doing anything to make this earth green. They're doing exactly what we're doing. We just can't see that they're mirroring us.
And as well
could be expected.
This is the problem, and it's much bigger than the government. It really honestly is, and people have got to begin looking at it as much bigger than the government. The government simply reflects our culture.
Yeah. Right?
That's what it does.
We agree on that.
And most of us, all of us to one degree or another, also reflect our culture. And it is the culture itself, the whole culture, which is big. That is flawed at this point, and we have to begin to
realize. Spell that out for me, because I'm trying to understand what you're saying. When you say the culture is flawed, I can say that America is fundamentally divided, but you're talking about something more.
Much bigger. And it's a little unfair to Daniel Quinn to try to paraphrase it.
So we'll just call it Terry's philosophy.
No, it's not mine. It's not mine at all. I'm just learning this as we go along. You know, I'm just studying this. But the thing comes down to a very simple thing, and that is the belief that the earth is ours to do with whatever we want. Going all the way back, going all the way back, supposedly.
The Bible, right?
Yes,
take dominion over the creatures.
But even prior to the Bible, it's an established idea. He refers to it, Daniel Quinn refers to it as totalitarian agriculture. It is the idea that as opposed to living with the planet is ours to do whatever we want. And that extends to everything on the planet, be it lumber, be it the next door neighbor, be it
Instead of racism, it's like speciesism. It's like humans are the best and
we must
screw the rest of the world.
And we must convert all elements on this planet to our use. Yeah. Every bit of land should be converted to our use. Every animal, every plant, everything should be converted so that we can...
His big point is culturally, we are all caught in this idea. And we are all living in this idea without realizing you've got to look beyond that. And the government is a failure only to the point that the whole cultural system is a failure.
Economists call it the free rider problem. Here's the problem. And you were talking about, well, I don't want to be green. Let my neighbor be green, right? Mm-hmm. Because carbon, it flows through the earth all around. If China's not doing their job, why should I do my job? My neighbor's not doing. So Terry, I mean, when you say, we take possession of the, why should I be concerned about my carbon footprint when Dick Cheney's not concerned about his carbon footprint? He gets to have his Hummer, which he loves. You design a system whereby people can cheat, and I don't mean cheat in an unlawful way, but in the sense of any kind of do-gooder system, right? Where you have an honor system, and you get to have as many cookies as you want, but it's an honor system, and you see Johnny over there, and he takes 25 cookies, you're like, well, I'm going to take the remaining 12, you know? Mm-hmm. When you see one person cheat the system, you have an incentive kind of to do the same. I mean, that's sort of even in the animal species planet. I mean, animals are trying to survive.
Another way he defines it is there are takers and there are leavers.
Well,
in those two groups. And basically,
and who succeeds?
Our culture is a taker culture.
And remember something. You see, one thing that we think about, you know, man is so short-sighted. So short-sighted.
Well, our life is short.
Yeah, yes. And it's getting shorter all the time, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean. We think of the world in terms of, 70 years instead of in terms of 70 million years. So we don't think that things that we are doing to drastically change our environment over the course of the last 50 years, we don't think of that in the terms of 1,000 years. We don't think about this. As I understand it, the population of the earth is going to double in the next, say, 40 or 60 years now. At first, it took about 10 to 15,000 years.
Well, even longer than that. Yeah. Much longer than
somewhere between 20,000 years it took for the population of the earth to double. Now it's doubling in 40 years, which means it will double again in 20, which means it will double again in 10, which means before you know it, every 5 minutes, the population of the earth will double. Who in their right mind thinks that A, we could sustain that, and B, what happens? See, we forget nature. What happens in a forest when the animals overpopulate the forest? Mother Nature has a way of fixing those things, but we tend to think that we are not subjected to the laws of nature.
We are different.
If we continue to do what we do, the laws of nature will surely take care of what we're doing.
Okay, but Garland,
if we're acting outside of the laws of nature.
Where do you go from there, though? All right? I mean, that's just like doomsday. Let's all run off a cliff. I mean, what is your answer to this problem that you see?
The first part of the answer, and again, I'm using Daniel Quinn today because that's what I'm learning from this moment. The first part of the answer.
The story of B. Everybody's going
to
read that tomorrow.
The story of B. The first part
I gotta
of the
get to
answer.
A first. You know, when I'm done with the story of A, I'll read the story of B.
If you're looking for just the answer, you're missing the point. And I don't mean that personally. I just mean intellectually in terms of what he's trying to say. The first thing we have to do, and we were talking about a little bit before, is realize that we are all caught individually and collectively. We are caught in a cultural pattern. And this cultural pattern
is it different from the way it was 100, 200, 500, 1,000 years ago?
It's different. You can actually mark it from about 10,000 years ago. It's 10,000 years ago is when it changed.
We shouldn't have gone outside that cave, Colin. I told you, stay in the cave.
Basically, I mean, you can look at it in a very, this is simplistic, but you can look at it in terms of the way the Native Americans lived, which basically.
Hunter-gatherers.
Hunter-gatherers.
Gatherers. They
as opposed to agricultural hoarding, which becomes a whole different thing. And as opposed to...
In other words, you gather the grapes or berries from the trees, and everyone gathers them, and they take it that they eat, rather than growing your own trees and saying, these are mine, get off
exactly,
my land.
Exactly. And so what we... But it's bigger than that, and for each one of us individually, too, we all have to somehow either look at ourselves and say, okay, what cultural box am I stuck in?
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm stuck in that cultural box, then obviously I can't find solutions to that cultural pattern. Somehow or other, I've got to free myself or move myself beyond the cultural box that is my life.
But assuming you're right, how do we go back 10,000 years?
Well,
we're not going back in that cave.
I think one of the things we're saying...
I have air conditioning now.
The thing I'm saying is not go back. The thing I'm saying is until I get beyond my cultural box, I can't possibly find another solution.
And I think one of the beginning ways
of doing that is the point we're talking about tonight is government. Mm-hmm. One of the beginning, the ways of beginning to do that is not getting angry at the government for doing or not doing the same exact thing that you're doing as an individual.
That's a good moral. Good point. Thank you, government.
Not putting enough money into windmills and they're doing not enough green stuff. Mm-hmm. But if I say to you, well, you know, if everyone simply keeps the air in their tires inflated properly, we will save X amount of tens of millions of barrels of oil per year, right? But are you checking your tires? No. Are you doing these things? So you're angry at the government for not doing the things on a macro scale that you're not doing
on a
micro scale.
How easy would it be to do an incentive?
It's a lot easier to
get 5 cents off your gas tax if you check your tires with you just do this little thing and you the machine. You do the machine, it checks your tires and you get 5 cents off. You know, people would suddenly check their tires, hundreds of millions of people, to save 5 cents a gallon on gasoline. It's not that hard to devise incentives to make people, instead of saying, well, look at Johnny, to say, oh, well, if I do the right thing, I get in that case, but you've gotten to the basic point there,
and this is a basic point none of us really want to face. You asked, you know, somebody else is taking 12 cookies, so why should I just take one and all that? It really is. This is all comes down to a moral decision individually.
I speak in terms of cookies.
And you know what,
I'm kind of a cookie-holic.
Let me just add one other thing, because, you know, laws in themselves are meaningless unless there is a moral factor behind the use and the interpretation of those laws. You can have a billion laws. We've got a billion laws. Who knows?
What really
comes down to is that moral decision. And it is a moral decision. Am I responsible for the consequences of my actions? It's that simple.
And here's the thing about what Mark said.
Mark said, which
is very interesting, because you've got negative and positive reinforcers.
That's right.
We use the term incentives. Okay. So what we're saying is, if we give people incentives, they will check the air on their tires and do other things that may make their country a bit greener. Well, when we look at the government, we look at Congress, we look at the executive, there are negative and positive reinforcers.
Yeah.
There are incentives.
The
problem is there are incentives to do the opposite of what we need to do.
Right.
So the natural course of action is, in fact, what's taking place. Something that we've talked about. Look, people who believe a certain, as we do, who tend to lean left, who tend to, you know, think we should have, health care for everybody, et cetera,
cleaner environment.
Cleaner environment, et cetera. We don't get together and we don't create negative reinforcement or positive reinforcement for politicians who go in the direction that we want. Meanwhile, there's a Tea Party or somebody over there who's on this side creating negative or positive. They're creating incentives.
How dare they be more raucous than the raucous?
They're creating incentives.
Understand.
So we're not, what I'm saying is we're looking at the government for not doing anything. The incentive is to go the other way and we won't even bring ourselves together.
I don't think it's that. The simple. The Tea Party, for instance, again, in terms of this cultural phenomenon, the Tea Party is working exactly within the cultural phenomenon.
Yep.
Exactly within it.
It's mine, Jack. Get off my land.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And if you don't, I'll shoot you.
Right.
You know, whereas...
Don't ask me to share.
You know, it's a progressive movement.
Mine. The Uncle Scrooge philosophy.
You know, if it's Obama or if it's the progressive movement or if it's various organizations, somehow or other we've got to find a way to speak to the larger issue.
Mm-hmm.
If we start to do that, then we will create some kind of unity in our movement. But at the moment, very few people have the guts to speak to the bigger issue.
You know what I mean?
In a way, Jimmy Carter tried to do this, and everybody laughed at him. You know, he said, "There's a real problem here with the way of our thinking."
That's what happens when you tell them. Here's what I find really interesting.
You know, if you take the Tea Party's religion, and they tend to be more church-going people, more religious people. If you look at Christianity, if you look at what we teach our children, what do we teach? It's nice to share, right? What are we proud of? Johnny is giving his cookie to his little sister. We're proud of that. What a good kid. What a sweet kid. We teach in all our children's books the benefits of sharing. In all our religious books, we highlight the aspects of the Bible, the Quran, that teach giving, that teach sharing. Then we become adults and say, it's mine! It's all mine!
My dad used to have a saying, I never forgot this, children don't listen, they watch and learn.
That's right. That's right.
So they don't.
But my point is that we want our higher self. Somehow we know.
Our higher self, yes.
Whether it's from religious training or moral training or secular humanism, whatever it is, we want to believe we're generous. Mm-hmm. We want to believe we're giving. Human beings want to believe that they are not going to be selfish. And they say, well, I'm not selfish, but he's selfish. And so, well, you know, I gotta protect myself, right?
Yep.
So we justify. We have to rationalize being unselfish because we kind of know that it's not a good thing to do.
You know, back to kind of taking this all back to where we started. So the question is, you know, arises. I'm going to put out the number. We're going to go to break in a few seconds. But the question arises, is the government some foreign entity that is completely divorced from the reality of our us and from our society, as so many people? I'm anti-government, as if the government is some, you know, foreign entity. I'm anti this guy over here. They're on another planet. They're ruling us from Mars or something. Are they some foreign entity that we can be for or against, or are we looking in a giant mirror, seeing the issues that we live out every day, and getting angry at ourselves in reality when we see the ugliness that we don't like in ourselves? 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. Who is this government? What is this government? Are they out to get you? Now, I know Terry's out to get me, but he's not part of the government.
I'm
so,
not.
One more time. 202-588-0893.
I'm out to get you. 0893.
We got a few more minutes before we go to break. Terry.
Well, one of the things that's interesting, again, and I keep on, you know, I feel like I'm preaching on this book, but this book has impressed me, and I'm just learning. That's all I'm doing is learning. As he pointed out, the very last people, of course, to ever discover that the cultural system is not working or that the system working are, in fact, the politicians and the rulers. Because it's not in their interest, obviously, to discover that.
No, they're doing just fine.
Yeah. So, I mean, in a sense, yes, the government is totally at this point. The government is at this point. The government is in many ways out of control. And it's not out of control just by being government. It's out of control, as we know, between that corporate government marriage that happened a number of years
ago.
And
are we also out of control?
But see, Terry,
next question.
We're beginning to see, I mean, this is part of the anxiety. They're beginning to see that this isn't working.
I say divide and conquer. I say the government is not a singular. It shouldn't be. The government are, not the government is. There are aspects of the government that are better than other aspects. If you're trying to conquer a problem, you divide it up and you say, all right, well, okay, I really hate most of where the government's going, but this politician I trust. Find one politician you trust. Find one person. I mean, we all
John
used to
Conyers.
Think.
John Conyers, that's
used to,
it.
Okay, John Conyers, a great example.
The only
you
one.
You know, we used to think it was Obama. All right, he's not. But maybe there are people that are working for Obama that we can talk to. That all I'm saying is if you say the government's out to get me, mm-hmm. you know, all that massive millions of people in the government, then there's no hope of change.
Yeah, because let me give you an example. And being an African-American, a view of the government, kind of a cultural view of the government. We got about a minute and a half here. Something that I thought was funny but true, you know, how comedians are the most brilliant people in the world.
And
but Chris Rock said, he said, well, how do black people look at the government? He says, we look at the government like that uncle who paid for your education, but he molested you. Only Chris Rock would think like
terrible.
That, you know. But
you know what I mean.
And that was interesting the way he said it, because from the African American community,
that what Tuskegee was molestation.
Keep in mind from the African American community, when you had changes, you know, the Jim Crow changes in South and the Little Rock Nine and everything.
Right.
From the African American's perspective, it was the federal government that came in and forced a lot of these Southern states and a lot of these people to do change lynch and things like that. Only could they go to the federal government and get the lynching laws changed. They weren't going to be changed. So from the perspective of the African American community, there's a certain feeling that the federal government has to be there to protect the minority.
Particularly
but,
against the state government.
Right. Particularly against the southern state governments. More. But anyway, but that's another story.
Talking
but anyway,
about Mississippi and Texas.
Yeah. But.
Texas.
But.
Perry, Texas.
But.
Pardon me.
By the same token, you had the Tuskegee experiment, you had other things happen. So, you know, it's your point, Mark. The government's not just one entity, but there are cultural perspectives of the government that that come from different perspectives. So at any rate, we are going to get out of here for one moment or so. We're going to go to a public service announcement. We're going to be back 202-588-0893. We're talking about the government. We'll
and
be
more.
Right back.
And about us.
When terrorists flew planes into the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and crashed in Pennsylvania, our sense of security was permanently shattered. Who have we become as a result of these acts? How has life been altered? Join WPFW and the entire Pacifica Network for our day-long presentation, 9/11's Footprint on America, 10 years later. On Sunday, September 11th, we'll begin at 12 noon with Democracy Now! Taking us back to that day. At 1 o'clock, the Pacifica Radio Archives will present a look at 9/11. KPFK in Los Angeles at 2 o'clock and KPFT in Houston at 3 o'clock will weigh in 1 hour each. And then at 4 o'clock, WBAI in New York will present an hour-long look at 9/11. At 5 o'clock, WPFW will look at the Pentagon on 9/11. We'll hear from people who were there and we'll have a debate about what happened at the Pentagon on that day. At 6 p.m. from KPFA in Berkeley, there will be 2 full hours of debate and differing opinions on the day of 9/11. The 2-hour debate will be followed by a 1-hour national Q&A call-in and response to the debate. Join us for this day-long discussion on these and other questions from 12 noon until 9 p.m. on Sunday, September 11th, right here at WPFW Washington for the Pacifica Network's 9/11's Footprint on America, 10 years later.
Somebody blew up America.
What?
Into the night and back to the Raucous Caucus.
Good evening. Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. My name's Garland Nixon. I'm here with
Mark Hester and Terry Levine.
I've got this four-legged, four-armed, four-legged, four-armed monster.
The Mark Terry Living Kester monster.
Yeah, I'm Terry D. Kester. Next to me is Mark Levine.
And you're listening to 89.3 FM WPFW here in Washington, D.C. And we're on with the Raucous Caucus, and you're part of the caucus. And we caucus every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. Next Tuesday, we will be at Ben's Next Door, 1211 U Street. We will be caucusing at 7
p.m. Please join us. If you haven't met us in person, it's a lot of people have been coming. We really appreciate, I got to say, all the people that have been coming. A lot of people say, I listen to your show all the time, but I never met you before, never saw you.
Yeah, and not only that,
we love it when you come.
Yeah, we'd love you, and Mark will buy you a crab cake.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't.
No matter how many thousands of people come,
or was it that they buy us a crab cake? Maybe that was
Terry.
It. Yeah,
no matter how many tens of thousands of people show up, Mark's going to buy them all a crab cake.
Yeah.
And he'll cut it tens of thousands of ways.
Yeah,
he's only going to buy one.
I express my profound appreciation to all of you.
Yes, 202
crab cake.
202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. We're talking about the government, and right now, TESPA. Welcome to WPFW.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
In a sense, a government is an institution where different interests in the society get some kind of balancing. It's a balancing institution. But right now, the U.S. government seems to have gone to the side of money. Instead of balancing different interests and keeping society at peace within itself, it has gone way to where the money is. You can work your interest into this government by having the number of voters on your side or by having money. But now, money seems to work all the way through so that it can also get you the votes, the numbers out to influence government. If a government like yours, which was much better than other governments in the world because it has a wider opening for intellectuals to come up with new ideas, with new discoveries, and also for young people to have their wishes expressed so they can see something better in society in their future. You are like any other government where dictators rule. You can make your country better only by opening the system, by supporting people with new ideas, by supporting young people in their education, and by giving them an opportunity to express themselves.
You are
stifling and killing your own country.
Thank you very much, Tesfa.
That was superb. That was superb, Tesfa. That really was. Thank you very much for calling.
He's definitely right about the influence of money.
And his beginning definition, too, that government is an institution that has to or should be balancing different interests.
That's what it was designed to be.
You know,
that's the
and
checks and balances.
Hopefully for the common good. And when it starts getting out of balance, you got a real problem, and it's out of balance. Very good, Tesfa.
Yeah. A good point. I mean, the interests now are balanced in favor of the few.
And you know, this isn't the first time it's happened, though, in American history. If you go back about 100 years,
I agree.
Almost exactly 100 years, you look at that period from 1890s to 1920s, you will find a period where we were maybe the most capitalist we ever were.
Starting in 1840s, probably.
Well, yeah, but really.
The robber barons.
Yeah, but the robber barons really began after the Civil War.
It's pretty capitalistic during slavery, frankly.
That was different, though.
Good point.
That was different. That was more like feudalism. And that was more like, you know, a few.
I would say it was capitalism.
It wasn't so much money as it was enslavement.
Are you kidding?
I'd say it was capitalism because it was the ultimate capitalism.
Yeah.
It was free labor. You want cheap labor in capitalism,
right.
It was
what
free
I'm
labor.
What I'm saying is that if you look at like the 1890s, 1920s, that's where you find a few very rich people, the Carnegies and the J.P. Morgans.
Which is exactly how we were founded.
No, I don't think so. I think
economically,
I think there's a difference between a few individuals. I mean, literally 5 or 6 or 8 millionaires, billionaires, Rockefellers and so forth, who had virtually, I mean, we didn't even have a Federal Reserve. We couldn't even print our own money. We needed money. The government had a panic in 1896. They said, Andrew Carnegie, we need billions of dollars. Here's your money,
we
government.
Just said the same thing to Warren Buffett, didn't we?
But let's go to Ken on line 4. Ken, I think the point is
we escaped that. We took a Great Depression to do it in a New Deal. But we did escape that, and we can do it again. I want to give people a little bit of hope.
But we've got to look at it, too. I mean, you know, because we were talking about it. You know, a lot of our problems today are systemic, going all the way back to our founding. And sooner or later, we got to realize that.
I agree. Ken, line 4.
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey,
all
Ken.
Right. It's corporate capitalism. So nothing has really changed.
Yeah.
And the government is basically capitalism. So as long as you have the government being capitalism, you can get the same product.
The question
is, you have religion. People in this country are religious, and they're not spiritual. There's a difference. Without changing those two things, you're going to get what you got.
The question I have for you, Ken, is I got a question for Ken. Okay, so you brought out several things about the government. When you look at the people of our society today, is our government in what you said, capitalist, et cetera, is our government any different from the average person? Ken?
Is it any different than
Yeah,
average
isn't
person?
That how we
yes,
are?
It's different than average person because it's the way that the government runs is basically lobbyists go to Congress to persuade what they want.
No, but
the
I think
the people, as the only way that the people, the general population, yes, we go and vote, but in this right now, in this stalemate that we have, the only way you're going to change the politician's mind is to peacefully go to the streets and to say what you don't want and what you want.
His question is bigger. You know, if I may paraphrase it, he's asking: is the behavior of the government any different from the behavior of the individual? Not the process of creating the government, but if the government acts strictly in its own personal self-interest to sustain corporations, and we, the individuals, act only to sustain ourselves as individuals, what's the difference? That's the question
I think there is a difference, because I think
he was asking Ken.
No, I want to hear Ken.
Right.
Okay.
But they don't understand that just because you went and vote, you still have to be actively involved beyond that process up until the point of the way that the country was founded.
Yeah, I think there is a difference, and I want to agree with Ken, between sort of the corporate multinational world in which we live now, which is, I think, very different from the slave-owning founders that began. Because there you have a person, he's accountable, he's a slave owner, he might beat you or lynch you
labor.
Or mistreat
we'll
you.
We'll call him labor.
We'll call labor. But the point is that today it's faceless. There are these corporate boards, we don't even know who these people are anymore. It's multinational corporations. We've got companies that are going to China and using children's labor and
slavery. Oh my God!
It is slavery, but it's actually worse in that it's fake. We don't even know. I mean, a lot of people like Apple products, but what do? They go to Foxconn out in China, and they pay someone $1 a day, and we think this is a liberal company. I'm not trying to pick on Apple; they're more liberal than other companies. Right. My point is that at least with the slave owner, the slaves knew who to fear.
Well,
right?
Not necessarily.
Today, it's very
but
hard to
that.
Even know in
but
this multinational world.
That's not really true of a slave situation. A slave is caught in this system, where he's literally moved around like meat and nothing more, and he may or may not know who his owner or his next owner is going to be. I mean, he's not part
well,
of...
He doesn't know those people.
And
I'm going to go to Kelly, and I'm going to say, Mark, see, here's why where I differ, because we talk about slavery, I'm not talking about people, because in a way, I don't think that a person was per se a slave. I think a person was in a condition of slavery.
Yes.
Slavery was a condition. Slavery was a way that people, that human beings, to say a slave in a way kind of differentiates the slave from
it
the master.
It makes it seem like it's permanent.
Right. They were human beings who were kept in a terrible condition.
Right.
So if you look at that, they were labor. They were free labor in a capitalistic society who were kept in an unthinkable condition of slavery. Okay. So when you go to our society and you look at the people in China who are working for $1 that we can have a Sean John t-shirt, they are labor. It's all the same. It's all about cheap labor. Well, let's get Kelly. We got Kelly here waiting patiently for a while. Let's see what he says before
we jump
back in.
Let's also give out the number 202-588-0893. We got some lines open if you want to join us.
202-588-0893. Kelly.
Yes. You're absolutely right about the outsourcing of slavery. And where is our government stepping in the good name of American people who would personally object to it and who are completely out of their reach to do anything about it? Thank you, NAFTA. But also, my concern is that, and what something that we don't talk about that everybody knows is true, is that all of our internet, our emails, our text messages, our phone numbers, phone calls are recorded on American citizens, and it goes to a national data bank. I mean, that is disturbing. That's our government doing that to us. Now, where is that information going? Who's using it? I mean, that is frightening. So
that,
I think
that,
that
is disturbing.
Two things I want to respond to that, and thank you very much, Kelly. One, what you have today, you'd say it's not just happening in China and other countries. We have wage slavery today.
Yeah.
And that is a term worth remembering. It's a term of pinning on Mitt Romney and everybody other politician that wants a stupid,
Rick Perry is the classic example of a race to the bottom.
Yeah, it's wage slavery.
We can compete with Mexico because we can treat Americans worse than Mexico.
Right.
And in fact, just in case you didn't know, that Texas has the highest percentage of low-paid workers in any state in the union.
They're tied with Mississippi.
Except Mississippi.
And 70% of the full-time workers in Texas have no health care.
Yeah. And it's wage slavery. So the same thing continues today. And the other point she was making, I want to, tonight, after you get done with the Raucous Caucus, you got to go to PBS and you got to watch Secret America, Top Secret America. It's going to be on Frontline. It's on PBS. It is about exactly what she was talking about, the level of secrecy. Not only secrecy in terms of information, but secrecy in terms of contractors, military, et cetera, and the way your information is being used is astounding. We no longer have a government that is involved in helping the people. It's involved primarily in spying on the people.
We were coming up on the 10th anniversary of September 11th, and last week we did a whole show about all the conspiracy theories in September 11th and a missile and a plane. What we don't focus on is what Kelly very, very nicely brings us on. The true things that we know are true, not some crazy wild conspiracy. conspiracy theory, mm-hmm. but the yeah, fact yeah. that under George Bush, the government, I mean, they used to spy on us before, but now under Bush, hundreds of millions of us, in other words, about at least two thirds of Americans, we know they looked at our phone calls, they looked at where we go on the internet, and they did it without a warrant. So much so that although there is a secret court, the Foreign International Surveillance Act, FISA court, they actually objected and for the first time suggested that, that the government couldn't do that. This is a court that basically does whatever the government wants, but they said, no, we're not going to keep doing this. That's how it was exposed in the Bush years. Now, President Obama has suggested he's not doing it anymore.
Oh, he's doing it more.
But we, well, the truth is we have no way of knowing.
That's exactly right. We don't have a way of knowing.
We do have. Watch the program tonight. He is doing more. He has escalated exponentially. And even worse, you now have private corporations doing it for their particular benefit, regardless of what the government, nothing to do with government policy whatsoever.
202-588-0893. Garland Nixon here with
Mark Levine.
And
Terry Kester, I think.
Terry Kester.
That's what your file says in the FBI.
It does. You better believe it.
89.3
thousands of pages long, Terry.
WPFW, the Raucous Caucus. A member of the caucus is with us. Another member of the caucus.
Another caucuser.
Another caucus. We're here to go. RG.
That stands for Raucous Caucus, doesn't it?
Yeah, Raucous Caucus.
I don't know. Hey, join in with RG. 202-580-8893. Go ahead, RG.
Shall we drink some Kamchatka, gentlemen? Oh, man, I'll tell you. Shall we turn this triangle into a tetrahedron or at least maybe a parallelogram? Now you've got the fourth point end on it, okay?
Okay.
I don't think we're four equal
sides
here.
Two black guys, you've got symmetry, balance.
All right. Quadrangle. Okay. We need some women that really be balanced. But go ahead.
Man. That's another story. Let's not go there.
I'll supply all of them. But at any rate, great conversation tonight, gentlemen. I just wanted to weigh in on the fact that I think you basically explained much of what was posited this morning on community comment with Nana Kwabena Brown about the USA Patriot Act legislation having been escalated to some extent this year. I don't know what the particular relevance of it was for today's topic, but after reading up on it, I find that, yes, as a matter of fact, yes, it was ratified this year, wasn't it?
They renew it. I was actually in Congress when they first did the USA Patriot Act in September 11th. And one of the things that we insisted on, we Democrats at the time, is that at least it would expire. The idea was that, look, we got these extraordinary things, extraordinary times, 3,000 people have been murdered and so forth. We'll give you these powers, Republicans, but it will expire.
Yeah,
and now it's been renewed four times.
We thought the tax cut would expire too. Ha ha.
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead, RG.
Okay, thanks. And, yeah, I was thinking that, you know, I was basically thinking that we might be able to parallel what's happened to America to, you know, a direct one-to-one correspondence on a flow chart to the Comintern in Russia to some extent, because much of what happened, the dissolution thereof, and then the way that there have been so many expatriates from world wars that we've had who have come stateside, we have a very liberal immigration policy that we have morphed into not the classical America of during slavery times or during the antebellum period or the colonial times or even the early part of the 20th century, but we've become a sort of beyond the melting pot, you know, into a more of a hodgepodge of different cultures. And I think much of that
mosaic
is filtered into government policy. You know, notwithstanding Nazi Germany, you know.
Boy, you've
Russia,
lost. This is the first time you've lost me, RG. You know, I'm not sure where you're headed with this. I'm not sure I get the picture.
That there are people who have come to the United States who have influence in our government because they've left theirs and bring many
but
of those.
We've always been a nation of immigrants.
To our government. And I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, after World War II, how many Nazis left Germany and were never accounted for again and resurfaced in the United States?
Well, yeah. Only the scientists and the ones that were doing the war.
Yeah, the
crimes.
Ones that we could use, you know. But, well, thanks a lot, RG. Now, I'm going to throw something out to you guys. Thanks a lot, RG. Appreciate the call. Always a pleasure. Guys, I'm going to throw something out to you.
I'm going to hit it back. I'm ready.
There was a time when there was no government. Right? There was a time when people wandered the earth and they were, you know, they gathered
and they
hunted.
There's that 10,000 years ago.
There
again.
Was a time. Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
So we came upon a time when we felt that it was best to have monarchs. We had kings and queens and blah, blah, blah. And at some point we realized, the people realized, such as in old France, that they needed to cut people's heads off. They realized that those types of things don't work for the common people, right? And we came up with other types of government. We came up with socialism, communism, whatever you want to call it.
Capitalism. They actually got worse. The communists and the fascists were worse than the kings.
So we've discovered that the whole monarchies thing doesn't work very well for the common people. We've discovered that and you could have never told the people going through all that their way of governing wouldn't work. We discovered that socialism at some point, for the most part, doesn't work all that great. But you could have never told the people that it wouldn't work. Is it possible, I say, from 100 years in the future, that we look back and we say, and there was another way that we tried?
Well, you know, the first thing I'm going to do...
Capitalism. Boy, that didn't work out well either. And we transitioned into something else.
Can I quickly quote Winston Churchill again? I know y'all have heard it, but I haven't said it yet on this show. One of my favorite quotes of Winston Churchill, democracy is the worst possible system except for all the others.
And Which is what they would have said about monarchy at the time. I'm simply saying, let's look historically, it's the best we know. Over 150 years. Is it possible? I'm just asking that at some point we could look at it and say, well, you know, somewhere after between 2000 and 2025, isn't it amazing? Capitalism crumbled and morphed into whatever it is now.
Terry's chance.
Yeah,
let me make some sense here, gentlemen. What has to happen is, you know, forgive me for saying this, but a little bit of humility in the sense that there's no
humility.
There's no this show.
Come
well,
on.
Well, I know it's not for the show, but I mean for the rest of the world.
Let's not get crazy
for the rest
here.
Of the world. You know, there's no system that is good or bad in and of itself. There really isn't. I mean, communism wasn't communism. Communism was totalitarianism. You know, let's be clear about that.
It was state capitalism that we called communism.
You know, capitalism isn't good or bad. Socialism isn't good or bad. Neither one of them fails or succeeds. You've got to, as Tesfa said in the very beginning, you know, there's got to be some kind of a balance. You need a socialistic component. You need a capitalistic component. You need even a communistic component. You need to balance these, and you need to be constantly in the position of saying, is it working today?
Well,
and if it's not working
today,
how do we adjust it? And, you know, to simply say, and I disagree with Winston Churchill, and I disagree with Mark, you know, to say that it's the best system that we've got, you know, or better than all the rest is a lousy answer. Because obviously that's saying we as human beings can't do better than this. Of course we can do better than this.
And you know what else it's saying? It's saying something that you said before. It's saying that we're all on a roller coaster going over a cliff and we know it, but we don't know how to get off. Mark,
there's
got
to
be better ways.
There's two things. One is the political system that we have, and the other is the economic system that we have, right? Because you can have a dictatorship that pretends to be socialist, right? That's what communism was. You can have a democracy.
It wasn't.
I agree with you.
Socialism with fascist leaders.
So I think the answer is, I still think democracy is the better system than all the others. I agree with Winston Churchill. But in terms of capitalism versus socialism, I do think we need both. And I'm ready to give you an example. And that is the nice country of Sweden, which according to the Washington Post and some other economic articles, has a roaring economy, like growth of 8 or 9%, with very little poverty. They don't have a massive wealth.
What do they spend on their military again?
Oh wait, they don't have one.
Well, that's true.
My point is, there are countries out there. I don't want to emulate China or Mexico, but there are countries out there I am willing to emulate. And when you see a country working, it's nice to see what works. And you're right. They don't have a military.
The money we spend on aircraft carriers, they eat and use
for
like
food and schools.
Things.
I mean, and that's the other point.
The question is, where is our next caller? And he is there. It's Waldo.
Hey, Waldo.
Waldo, welcome to the
Poor
caucus.
Waldo has heard that his entire life.
If he was here, he'd give me what for.
That's right. Waldo. Hi, Waldo.
Yeah, you guys are like two left shoes. Ain't nothing right about what you say. First of all, to quote Bob Avakian, democracy, can't we do better than that? And yes, we can. You got your theories all mumbo jumbo because you don't understand what communism is, you don't understand what socialism is, and you don't understand the concept of dictatorship of the proletariat, which is different than dictatorship of the bourgeoisie. It is a transitional phase. And if you read some books by Marx...
You're talking Marx now.
I mean, a true Marxist on the line.
If you read specifically... stuff by Bob Avakian about the new synthesis of the communist revolution, you would not be so wrong. But you brothers are wrong.
Waldo, has ever been a successful Marxist country?
What? All this about a little bit of this, a little bit of that. You know, Sweden's a small country. You try that on a large-scale country. You want to see where a little bit of communism, a little bit of capitalism work? Try Chile, where the fascists overthrew that while the communists were taking the guns out of the hands of the people to disarm them and to totally ruin that economy. You can't have a little bit of democracy. You can't have a little bit of revolution.
You know what's wrong with your idea, Waldo? And I'll tell you what's wrong with it very simple, and this is my very strong opinion. Anyone that says there's only one way to solve a problem is not understanding the problem.
Such
there's
a skin of cat.
I don't care if it's religion. I don't care if it's politics. I don't care if it's economic. The one way to solve a problem does not exist.
It's my way.
Yeah,
that's
life,
the way.
Life just ain't that easy. I really disagree with that strongly. Sorry, Waldo.
But,
glad you called. But
that doesn't mean that Karl Marx was entirely wrong. It means that it's not the one solution.
Well, you know what I will give? You know what I will give Waldo? I'm telling you what I'll give Waldo.
He put the
courage of his convictions.
No, I certainly appreciate, number one, I appreciate his contribution to the caucus tonight.
Yes, absolutely.
But number two, let me tell you what I'll give Waldo. You have people calling people Marx who have never read Marx.
Waldo clearly
you have
has.
People yeah. calling people right. that talking about Trotsky who that's have never it. Read. You're a Trotskyist, really? You ever read Trotsky? Yeah. No. You have people who are always blurting out names and blurting out all these things about other people. They haven't read it. They know nothing about it. I'll give it to this guy. He was well versed in Marx and Engels. I'm sure he read the Communist Manifesto, etc. So
das
here is a man, whether you agree with him or not, who was very well educated on the issues.
On one point of view.
Right.
And I was
I'm not saying I agree
sorry,
with him.
I'm sorry, Waldo. Yeah. I think that's a dangerous way to be.
But I'm not
really
saying I agree
do.
With him. But I'll say that's more than a lot of people who have all these wild-eyed positions.
It's the same as the evangelicals that believe there's only one way
right.
of religion solving
I'm
the problem.
I'm not saying I agree
it's
with him, Terry.
It's the same thing, right. As Shia is saying,
that's
we
right.
have to have Shia law.
That's right.
I'm trying to say to Waldo, and I'm sorry, Waldo, I don't mean to offend you. I really honestly don't. But I'm saying we all have to be humble enough to say, I don't know all the answers. I know part of some answers.
And I think that generally the answer is some combination of systems, whether it's, the Christians were right about that, well, the Muslims were right about that, the Jews got that one, the atheists are kind of right about that.
Yeah.
The capitalists have a point. If you had a pure socialist system, why would anyone work hard at all? Well, the socialists have a point. If the capitalists had their way, a lot of people would starve. So you kind of try to find, and then we're going to constantly argue about the right balance, and that's what democracy is.
Let me throw this out. When you talk about socialism and capitalism, there is a falsehood that we base government on. There's a falsehood that we base everything on. And I'll tell you what it is. That the government is run by laws or rules or regulations and not people or not men and women. Okay? So when you say socialism, there's a lot of things. You could design a government that would work perfectly. It wouldn't be hard to design it to work perfectly.
Yeah, benevolent monarch, benevolent tyrant would work perfectly.
In its design, if it ran as designed, socialism would work perfectly. But you wouldn't have people. Yeah, you wouldn't have a black market and
no,
all the other.
No,
If it operates as it was designed.
No, you can't.
Capitalism would work much better.
No, that's
well, here's
not
what
true.
I'm saying. But people.
Not true.
I'm making your point, actually, Terry, if you listen to me.
I'm
saying that when you recognize the weaknesses and the frailties and the emotional issues of people, these systems can't work as designed because of the way people are. These systems are operated by
which is
people.
Why I'm actually going to give a plug to the founders. As much as they were slave-holding white men and so forth, they did at least understand the concept.
Well, I'm glad you can overlook that.
The concept of checks and balances.
Yeah, I understand.
The idea that everyone needs to jealously guard their power and look over everyone's shoulders.
Which means.
They had a very low opinion of humanity, and on that, they were right.
They were right.
Which
means,
I got to give them credit.
Which means you cannot create the perfect system, and you don't try to create the perfect system. That's like saying you could create a perfect car. No engineer worth his salt would ever say you have a perfect car. You have a car that'll operate well in certain set of circumstances, and that's the best you're going to achieve. You can keep on improving on it and changing it. It is not permanent. There is nothing that permanent. Everything needs to be maintained and changed.
The only thing permanent.
You want to form a more perfect union?
The only thing
Terry,
permanent.
Perhaps?
The only thing permanent is the Raucous Caucus, because we have
oh,
so many
heavens,
members.
Thank
the
heavens.
Caucus will always perpetuate
oh,
long after.
There will
we
always
are,
be raucous oh, people.
Right.
Caucusing.
Long after the three of us oh. are gone, the
after
caucus
gone,
will perpetuate.
Is that possible?
Now, don't we have some people to thank?
Terry's going to haunt us.
We
after he's gone.
We have some people to thank. Some people that are around here. That if it weren't for these great people, we wouldn't be here.
Amen. David.
Dave. David he's Kelly. Back there behind the glass. David Kelly. Yeah. Thank you very much.
And Bob Daughtry and John Hughes.
And Gloria Minot.
And Jerry, our I mean, there's some really
Jerry
great people.
Always brightens our day.
Yes, there's so many people. Remember, so we want to thank everybody here at TFW.
Who follows us.
Yeah, Brother Ah,
yes,
who
yes,
calms
Brother
everyone after we freak them out.
Thank God he's
my name's
here.
Garland Nixon. I'm here with
Mark Levine.
And
Terry D. Kester.
And we are part of the Raucous Caucus, as are you. We're here every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. on WPFW 89.3 FM here in Washington.
Join us next week at Ben's Next Door.
Please.
Live.
WPFW, Washington.